amazed me how freeing it is not to worry about this little personality. And how easy it is to forget. Like, and to start living in, like, resentment and all harumph and you're not thinking, like,
yeah,
it's so easy to forget. And when I just, like, remember, it's just not a problem.
Yeah. All I can say is long live resentment. We don't want to run out of resentment.
Definitely, that's a big piece of keeping the self in place.
Oh boy.
How boring.
I know. The first thing I do when I start feeling really resentful is I go straight to a meeting and set up the chairs and warm up the coffee. And I don't even have that particular addiction. I don't care.
You
got
do.
Yeah, really. I'm about to justify one of many addictions, so I've come here instead to set up the chairs and warm up the coffee. Oh boy. What you reading, Suzanne?
Just my email and stuff.
Anything
question.
Worth probably nothing worth sharing, right?
Here we go.
I don't think so.
All right. I trust you.
Nothing very exciting or anything.
Yeah. Same with me. Well, I did get a voicemail from my mom today, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can play it for you, but I won't.
Oh,
it wasn't. It wasn't. It was actually. It was more kindly portrayed. It wasn't a ongoing character assassination.
Well, we should get that side of her.
Yeah. Yeah. She was basically saying, "Look, you know, your father is in more or less total dementia, so he's, you know, he's just lying around here." Dying, and she's, you know, dealing with her panic issues and anxiety issues, and she let us know that Beth should buy the chocolate vegan drink because he won't drink the vanilla anymore, and that you know, we need to talk because my sister is, well, she's, you know, busy with herself and her family and doing everything she can for them. But it just sounds like they're ready to, you know, be shuttled off to an institution. And I'm leaving that decision pretty much in my sister's hands.
Can she do the same thing for my mother?
Yeah.
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 That'll be helpful.
Yeah, and once again reiterated that Beth and I would be happy to move B and Ted down here where the facilities might be newer and less expensive than they are in Long Island. Who knows, that move, even if it were to come to pass, which I doubt, would probably just kill them. The move itself would kill them, which would be advantageous to everybody. and you know, because my sister has never traveled down here to visit with me or Beth, and for which I don't hold any resentment. It would be likely that if she were to consent to my folks moving down here, she wouldn't see them anymore, or remarkably rarely. And I don't think she sees that as a boon to her life experience.
How often does she see him?
Well, I don't know, maybe once a week or, you know, once every 10 days or something. She lives only, you know, 20 minutes or so from them. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, you know, we're happy to have them right down here at the new Solana, you know, retirement or whatever it is, nursing home or assisted living, right down the street from Redner's, brand new facility.
You're going to go visit them?
Would I go visit my parents if they live nearby?
Yeah, then you're going to have to visit them.
No, I would probably hire you to visit them.
I mean,
And Suzanne could go. Suzanne could go visit them professionally as a mental health professional.
She's unique.
I'll drive them crazy, and then you can come in after.
Things are working out. See, this is just flowing in the right direction. Yeah. Oh boy. Just have to see what happens next. What should we do for your mom, Suzanne?
I don't know. Somebody needs to take charge and figure out what the heck to do with her, you know?
Well, I understand the Soylent Green machine will be back in your neighborhood next week. It looks, and you know, they look a lot like they look a lot like those libraries on wheels, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking Chitty Chitty Bang Bang only for like older folks. I don't know.
There you go.
Didn't they like lure kids in with an ice cream truck?
Yeah, they lure them in and then they put them in the grinder.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they sell them as sports bars. So here we are. And where's all the meetup folks that were going to join us tonight?
Started talking about all that fun stuff. Extended breastfeeding.
How did you decide that that would be a good thing to throw in there?
Extended breastfeeding? Family extended breastfeeding?
I'm reading this shit. I'm like, these things couldn't be more incongruent. Like, if you're reading this as a muggle, you're like, this doesn't make any fucking sense. I'm like, I don't know what this guy's talking about.
Family.
Well, surely you can see the humor through all that, no?
I don't know.
I don't know if a muggle can even understand, no, what.
It's total humor.
Perfect. She said, oops, she wrote back saying, oops, I forgot, I have to go to school tonight.
Oh, my gosh. So she didn't realize you were just being facetious?
I don't know.
Yeah. He wasn't being facetious. He was being honest.
Well, yeah, it wasn't.
Go there. It can go any number of places.
It can.
I can talk about extended breastfeeding.
Yeah.
My nephew's wife, Jen, said her breasts were her like biggest tool in raising her children. And her children.
There you go.
Stuck around for a long time.
Uh huh. Well, so see, we covered it.
Yep. Good.
I wasn't lying.
Yeah. Got that out of the way.
All we need is a little, a little celebration of ancient aliens, and we're covered.
What are ancient aliens exactly? Is that like
Well, like Kevin, for instance. Gods? Kevin, your husband, for instance, he's a current alien. He's a walk-in. We're talking about aliens, you know, that kind of presaged, what we would call the birth of civilization.
I see.
Yeah, those folks. The folks that wrote on the walls of the pyramids and built, Easter Island and the pyramids all over South America.
I remember that documentary when I was a kid. It blew me away. Chariots of the Gods.
Yeah.
Love Chariots of the Gods.
Yeah, wasn't that great as a kid? You're like, wow.
Yeah. Cool.
So...
Steven, were you caught on the ice in Central Park?
No.
All right. In other words, you're too wizened to walk on the thin ice of the lake of Central Park and then get stuck in the water. You still have snow in New York from the recent storm?
No.
All gone. Okay.
Yep.
It was warm there.
Well, yeah, you had it's 60, 70 degrees over the weekend, right?
Yeah, it's pretty boring around here.
Yeah, we can all say the same. Yeah. Yep, all 9 million people that live in New York probably feel the same way. Except the restaurants are good.
I noticed Stuart Schwartz is going there next. Well, I don't know next, but
oh, he's visiting New York?
I noticed he has a retreat there. I think it was April, maybe, I don't know.
Huh. We should all go.
Yeah.
We can all crash on Steven's floor.
I'm sure he'd love that.
Yeah.
I'll paw you up one on top of the other.
All right. We're all potty trained, but we like different flavors of tea.
That's okay.
I've got a good roll-up head.
Road trip.
They like one of those Japanese hotels where they put you in a drawer. Like,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like at the morgue.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have plenty of drawers here. It's okay.
Nice. I'm looking forward to it.
That was a Seinfeld episode, too.
That was. That's right. Kramer had people in his, like, bureau, I think. Yeah.
Nice. So, anyone have a topic?
Proper posture.
Ooh, proper posture.
Yep.
That's a good one.
I'm practicing it. Can you tell?
Yeah, I can see it. You look
I'm
like
the opposite of that. Can you tell?
I can see the curvature of your spine from here.
Well, I'd like to talk about reality.
All right, you're on. You win.
I mean, I don't really know where I want to go with it. But, like, this whole idea, you know, like physics. Does it take you anywhere into understanding who you are?
It can appear to anything can appear to be a, you know, a bridge or a vehicle for so-called understanding who or what you are. But if we want to be, you know, kind of self-righteously glib about it, the finality of understanding who or what you are amounts to nothing at all. So all the bridges, you know, collapse.
So it's no better than, you know, eating a brownie or...
No. Yeah. Pot brownie could be as effective as string theory any day.
What about a regular brownie?
Regular brownie? Yeah, not as good as the pot brownie, but, you know, if you're not bad.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's funny is here's this miraculous animation. Wow. And the miraculous animation thinks that it is something. Oh, this is something. This is miraculous animation. And guess what? This is my miraculous animation. And look at all the evidence I have to support the genesis and hegemony of my self-referencing as I, as my, as this amazing animation. And so how did this animation come about? Well, you know, it's either the Great Turtle or something kind of like the Great Turtle, right? There's a Genesis cosmology for everyone. If you don't like the Genesis cosmology of your upbringing, you can always select to participate and read deeply into the Genesis cosmology of somebody else's upbringing. And then you're like, oh, okay, so now I know how this came about. And that doesn't mean I'm enjoying it anymore or any less. I'm still suffering, or I'm still this, or I'm still that. Or I'm living a wondrous life, bouncing from extreme sports event to extreme sports event, and sleeping with attractive people pretty much on demand. In which case, I'm not seeking fuck all. I'm eating good food, my body's at peak fitness, and I have all kinds of fuck buddies. And the last thing I'm thinking about is self-realization. Go fuck yourself. go fuck yourself, you fat, bald goober. Referring to myself, of course. Hey, you fat, bald goober, what are you talking about all this bullshit for? I'll tell you why, because you're fat and you're bald and you're bored and you're stupid. Yep, that's got me. I swear I'm going to lose weight, do some extreme sports, and, you know, sleep around. My wife will throw me out. I'll have that to contend with, but...
then.
Yeah. So that covers it pretty much, right?
The reality thing.
Yeah, it pretty much covers it.
Yeah.
Next. You see you see we can't help but to be triggered by the appearance of an individuated approach to this miraculous animation as being mine, belonging to me. And so I'll go in search of any number of cosmologies and explanations and, you know, authorities to tell me what this is and what I should do about myself so that I can reach some imaginary condition of sanguinity, which does not exist.
Well, what does a physicist do after he realizes that? Because aren't there a couple awakened physicists?
Yeah, I think, yeah, there probably are a couple of...
Just kind of play along and...
Well, yeah, they do. I mean, they do what they do. You know, they remain employed, or they, if they're successful being, you know, spiritual teachers or published, or if they're published, or they can do... Like, you know, what about Nassim Haramein, right?
That guy's so lame.
Right, I mean, he tells everyone that the proton is a black hole. And you're like, okay, I'll pay to see you.
Mm.
And it sounds like, you know, he's on a spiritual path or that he's, you know, a breakthrough authority on the nature and texture of consciousness, and by listening to him, you spend money and you listen to him. I don't know if anything actually happens with any of them. You know, David Bohm hung out with Krishnamurti and, you know, woke up, I guess, and spoke, lectured for a while, doing what he called, you know, some kind of dialogues. He had dialogues, you know, and he's dead. And I don't know if anyone that went to his dialogues, you know, became enjoyers of, you know, a miraculous insight or not. So restlessness, you know, the notion of restlessness accompanies the myth of individuation. They're one and the same. So we think that because we are subjected to this remarkable animation that we would benefit somehow getting to the bottom of it all. And then end up like near Sagadatta with crazy eyes and, you know, hand movements, kind of like the robot on Lost in Space.
He kept his business up.
They failed. He became, you know, so lusciously absorbed in himself that his five or six beady shops became just one beady shop. And then whoever was looking after it looked after it. When Ramesh came on the scene, a guy that was, you know, more or less wealthy by Indian or even Western standards, that was a former president of the Bank of India, you know, he offered Nirsagadatta financial help, tithing, right, considerations, and I think Nirsagadatta probably accepted them. He didn't necessarily accept financial gifts from anyone, but he understood and trusted and knew Ramesh and Ramesh's intentions well enough that I think he was, you know, happy to be partly supported by Ramesh and maybe a handful of other people that were capable of contributing to his, you know, ministry and healthcare as he died from throat cancer. Is that what you were aiming for? Did you want to figure out who of us are going to support you once your body starts failing?
That's a good idea.
Yeah, well, get to the bottom of it. Enlightenment, that's not that important, but I want to figure out who's going to pay the fucking bills as I slowly go to death. That makes more sense.
A lot more sense,
yeah. Yeah, so you see, we can't help but to imagine that that there's a discovery, you know, matrix or a discovery adventure that can be or is worth having, because we see, you know, so-called awakened celebrities portrayed in various Hindu comic books, and then generations of people that claim to be enlightened, you know, under the umbrella of their original, you know, lineage holder. And so the whole thing looks like a big you know, circle jerk. When you could say the joke, the joke is on you or me or anyone. The joke is on us, presuming that we are the corporeal individuated recipients of this marvelous animation. Once our loyalty to the marvelous animation goes down the toilet, then the craving for some kind of enlightenment also changes. And then you're left with a whole different order of magnitude of intelligence, which is not the consequence of anything.
It's not linear, because you can't, like, stitch it together anymore. You know, you're like, I could have just been, like, dimension jumping for, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, obvious. I'm like, I really can't stitch. Like, there's just no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter.
Well, it matters in the way that it matters, and it doesn't matter in the way that it doesn't matter. You can't, you know, having a conclusion about anything at all, whether it matters or doesn't matter, it's a misnomer. Honk.
Well, I'll shut my mouth. I don't know.
Yeah, wasn't, you know, no intention that you do that or be...
No. It's just that everything leads to, what can you say about it?
Yeah. It curiously does lead back to, really, what can you say about it, but...
Yeah.
But that can be, that doesn't have to, you know, discourage or end conversation. Because the something that's stranger than what can you say about it is what can you feel about it. You know, even after the loquaciousness might simplify or resolve, you're still left with a profound encounter with feeling, not necessarily emotivity. Just the, the pressure of sentience, the felt pressure of sentience itself. And learning how to, let's say, refrain from interpreting the felt pressure of sentience, that's the yoga of radiant presence. That's the curious and infuriating yoga of inquiry into awakening. You call them, you know, let's just say coping skills, right? A new set of coping skills with the irrefutability of yourself as felt presence, as a remarkable animation. Most of our human drivel is an avoidance and a deferral tactic, because we haven't developed mature coping skills to deal with the pressure of consciousness, the pressure of animation. We're irritated by it, actually, even though we crave more and more and more and more of it or from it. We're actually, in a sense, profoundly irritated and agitated by the, let's call it, the fact that this incredible animation has come about without our permission, without our consent or agreement. And this is like, fuck. We think, oh, it's terrific to be alive. Yeah, okay, best of luck with that. Which is a kind of a, you know, for some people that are actually able to, you know, turn their life into an endless stream of enjoyment, my hat's off to them. I think most people live with, some degree of, what's the term? Quiet desperation.
I don't know how quiet it is.
Yeah. I think Frank Zappa said it best when he said, you know, go to work and be a jerk. Brown shoes don't make it. Quit school, why fake it?
Don't eat yellow snow.
And don't eat the yellow snow. Yeah. you know, go move to Montana and raise dental floss. Going to Montana soon. Yippee-yi-yo-ki-yay. It, boy, wouldn't it be great if there were a spiritual answer? Wouldn't it be great if there, you know, there were a destination or an outcome for meditation? I mean, in a sense, thank God there's not, because it would be terrible if there were, but we practice those things hoping that there is. Did we handle your question with aplomb?
Sure,
okay. Yeah, time, psychological time is restlessness. And psychological time is, you know, manufactured spontaneously. The movement of sensation that appears to be renewing and refreshing itself contributes to the sense of psychological time, of experiential, circumstantial time. And that contributes to the sense of individuation or, you know, creaturedom. And so we're remarkably irritated by having all this time on our hands. But the last thing we want to do is contemplate death or the end of it all. So there's this inner schizophrenia where we have an insatiable appetite for more experience, and yet we have a profound, if not semi or unconscious, disdain for the remarkability of this uninvited animation.
Yeah, it's not. It's weird that it doesn't seem enjoyable to consider. There's something weird about considering like that. This moment is like it for like this is infinite. This is just it keeps. You're not gonna die. Maybe this is. Just, I mean, there is no, and that is like. That's like an infinite amount of never-ending time, just constant. You're like, that's a little freaky. There's something about it that's just
freaky.
What are we going to do for that long?
You know? I know, yeah, it's exactly.
Not long, it's like funny. You're just like, you get kind of like, like you need to break it into smaller.
Yeah.
You
know? What am I going to do for this long, being the imagination of the rest of my life? You wouldn't trade a minute of it, but at the same time, it's like, I don't really know what to do with myself, as in ever. But there's a bunch of humans that appear to be, you know, either forced by virtue of survival needs to work 4 jobs and raise 6 kids and live in an apartment, you know, where 3 or 4 generations of human beings are all sleeping together under the same roof, vying for the same single, you know, bathroom.
I thought that was Stephen's house.
Yeah. Well, it will be soon.
Yeah.
Mi casa, su casa. Yeah. When you see what, you know, the restlessness of becoming is made of, or the curious way that one might be interested to, you know, enjoy or pursue self-realization, the whole thing becomes really, really suspicious, rather suspect. Stephen, I muted your audio because your microphone's on loud and loud. Not that you need to change anything, but if you want to say something, you can unmute yourself. Nan, I think, is rolling on her balls.
How'd you know?
Because I can see the underside of your desk.
Yeah.
Your hotel desk.
Actually a coffee table, but close enough.
Coffee table. I just knew that you were completely on the ground.
That's it.
Yeah. Good move.
Yeah. I can't bear to sit still in front of a computer terminal when I'm not at work.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Try Monkey Cam. GoPro. Yeah. You know, that's why the escape from gravitational pull of consciousness itself can look like and feel like a arduous, though sometimes thrilling, sometimes infuriating, adventure. And why, you know, those few people that are really interested in passing through the gate of conformist or consensus reality make, you know, a considerable amount of time in their life to recalibrate their consciousness to, you know, a companion or alternate way of seeing and feeling things. Because it is that. It exactly is that. It is an alternate or companion way of seeing and feeling things. And if it if it invites you and catches up with you, then it's no longer casual. You know, it's no longer the weekly or monthly visit to the dojo. This is really on you. And you, as you begin to decouple from the, you know, presumption of your own inner hallucination, well, you know, you have to confront the breaking down of the comic book character, the caricature of yourself. And that forces or encourages you to look more deeply or consider the texture of present experience in a very different way than moving through the life under the influence of the caricature of yourself. Convincing yourself and having everyone else reinforce the fact that you think you know who and what you are.
It's interesting to look at the world and see how often people are just adamantly going around making sure everybody knows who they are.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's kind of the name of the game here.
Yeah, when I walked into that star group those couple of times just to kind of say hello, you know, there were a few people in there that were, you know, portraying that, right? I need you to know, you, the newcomer or whomever, you need to know who and what I am. The whole group needs to know who and what I am, you know, as an astrologer and a Gnostic and a mystic and a this and a that. Self-promotion, self-promotion, self-promotion. Yeah, it's, you know, it's entertaining up to a point and then it's tiresome.
Well, it's tiresome when it shows up here as well. It still shows up and I recognize it and it's tiresome.
Yeah, that's right. That's part of the, you know, that's part of the unwinding of a certain kind of habit, a certain kind of orientation.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, realization is, let's just say it's real. You know, I mean, John DeReuter may not be a realizer because he's still so interested in sleeping with anyone that wants to sleep with him. I mean, you wonder what his real motivations are, you know, in his spiritual life. Is he enjoying the immersive nature of emptiness and, you know, naturally sharing that with people just for the joy and the thrill of it? Why does he keep soliciting people to be sexual partners? I mean, it's just like, Johnny, you know, what up? Or the same thing with Bentinho, you know, he keeps soliciting people to participate in his, you know, messianic worldview. It's like, you know, if you little fucker, you adolescent little fucker, had any sense of the, you know, expansivity of this, you would, my bias, of course, wouldn't be trumpeting all this nonsense that you trumpet. It would be simple and unadorned. You wouldn't have to create an institution where you become the, you know, the master of everyone else's transmutation. You wouldn't be so consumed to make all of these radical claims about yourself. Who gives a fuck? So there's something to be said about, you know, a sober, adult, easeful way in sharing and communicating, you know, the nature of liberation, the nature of realization, without having to solicit people for intercourse, solicit people for money, and convince them of your unending grandeur. That, you know, that sneaks up on you. It infiltrates your being. And so naturally it does become a way of living, a way of socializing, a way of communicating, a way of being with, you know, the pleasure of being with other persons, people, tribal or otherwise, that turn out to be a form of sanctuary rather than a form of self-promotion and hysteria. That's a lovely way, I think, you know, speaking anthropologically, of how human beings can hang out by contributing to a sense of sanctuary. Transcendent sanctuary. Not all this soul robbing that we do. I wrote a little thing for the Night Sky Sangha Facebook page. I haven't posted it yet. I had a business call and interrupted, but the kind of the simple idea was, hey, there's two kinds of people. You know, there's people that live through the eyes of denial, and that's most of us. And then there's, you know, the folks few and far between that live through the eyes of wonder. Living through the eyes of wonder creates a certain kind of sanctuary. Living through the eyes of denial is what we can see occurring in the, you know, the greater geopolitical, you know, canvas, which looks like, if you're into, you know, Fukushima and Deepwater Horizon and Aliso Canyon and the warming of the Arctic, and the shift in the food chain, or the chemtrails, or the vaccines, or the billionaires, or the this, or the that, you know, the whole fucking show is going to, is at a very, call it, you know, stressful place. And that is consciousness, so-called human consciousness, you know, which is not human consciousness, looking through the eyes of denial, through the eyes of a extremely myopic bio-local survivalism, which turns out to be, you know, exploitive, whether of ancient plankton, which turns out to be fossil fuel, or, you know, the destruction of habitat, or the political movement toward accumulation and fascism. All of that, those are the natural symptoms of consciousness in denial. If the human, so-called human, was capable of a Gaic, a deep appreciation of the Gaic wave, and not just the Gaic wave, because even that's a representational field, but of the, you know, call it the galactic wave, or the cosmic wave, or the transcendent wave that is not beholding to an independently existing reality, but understands the depth and texture of what we might refer to as consciousness, well, that's being nourished by wonder. Being capable of being nourished by wonder creates sanctuary, and that sanctuary may or may not survive longer than the human that operates through denial, but well, it just feels a lot less violent to me. Though, you know, let's just face it, behaviorally, hey, I'm no vegan. I may live, you know, more or less kind of low carbon footprint as compared to a lot of people in the so-called United States. But even being a fossil fuel burner and user in the United States, I'm as much of a pig fucker as anybody. So I'm not holding myself out as being anything at all. You know, I'm a seeker fucker loser as well as the next guy. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio is all interested in climate, but he sure flies private jets around a good deal, you know, and yachts and other, you know, fossil fuel burning vehicles so he can fuck starlets. I'm like, thanks, Leo. You're really keeping with the climate change, you know, thing. But these kind of absurd criticisms could be made of anyone, you know. I mean, Nirsag Gadatta was a nonviolent guy, except the fact that he scared the shit out of everyone.
All day long, it sounds like, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, he smoked himself to death, so he wasn't helping with the carbon footprint either.
I used to get a lot of identity out of keeping a pretty, well, as far as I thought I could, keeping a smaller footprint.
Yeah.
And I've given up on that particular identity.
Yeah.
And it's not like I don't feel like I'm overly wasteful, but you can get an identity out of that just as well as anything else.
Yes, you absolutely can. You can, right? You can derive an identity from anything, even submicroscopic. You can turn a submicroscopic whisper of infinity into a, you know, profoundly unpleasant identity. And we do.
real quick. We'll see it coming. Won't know what hit you.
You know, part of what we, you know, play around with is the you know, the humorous undermining of the familiar sense of self, imagining him or herself to be of the nature of something and therefore either in possession of or without possession of one's, you know, longed for enlightenment. So we're really pulling the rug out from under the habit of a self-identification that reaches into this unsought animation and, you know, then has a story to tell about one's present condition, past condition, and future condition. That's how the liberation occurs. It's not that you find anything, because there's nothing to find. What happens is that slowly or gradually in fits and starts, the presumption of yourself gets undermined. The very warp and woof and texture of individuation gets undermined. And as that unravels, what remains is, you know, liberation on tap, which is a little bit different way of, you know, let's say presenting it than the kinds of schools and teachers and teachings that make it look as if you should apply yourself and you'll end up somewhere. You will not end up anywhere because you're not anywhere now. If you think that you're somewhere now, then your longing for liberation will, you know, remain achingly a carrot in your future. But that fuels a lot of, you know, call it the New Age and non-dual dollar. Why do you think they have the SAND conference, right? Science and Non-Duality conference. It's flooded with a bunch of people that think that they're someplace now and that they'll benefit from, you know, the exquisite teachings of Rupert Spira. or the curious, you know, remarks that someone like that Nassim guy or some other contemporary physicist has to offer. But all of that are just, you know, those are just cosmologies. Those are entertainment cosmologies. So there's a sweet undermining. It can be painful and is painful for however long it is and can be painful. There's a sweet undermining of the strength, the inertia, the habit of presuming that you're presently in some kind of condition and that you can know and do know what that condition is. When that,
you can do something about it.
Well, those are the same, right?
Yeah.
They're the same. If you presume that you're in a condition and somehow that condition is unpalatable, then you are imbued with the sense or presumption that you can and should do something about the condition that you think you're in. You know, everyone that lines up for the microphone at the Adyashanti retreat is suffering from the same thing. So the undermining of the loyalty and the habit of subtly and rapidly interpreting present experience to be that of a creature in a realm gets undermined. And that leaves you with, well, wonder. Bless you. Can I get you a Kleenex? Most of humanity, the teeming species, are doing what they can and need to do to try to put, one or two meals in their belly each day. You know, in India, of course, right, that includes, burning anything they can get their hands on. Vegetable waste and cow dung and, coal or whatever, so that they can make, a fire. And where I was living in India, there was no electricity. That ashram had no electricity. We had an outhouse, to poo. There was a pump to get water from the local water table that if you drank, you would invariably get sick with one thing or another, because in India, the poo table and the water table are not, segregated. And how did they cook? Well, they burned cow dung or maybe sticks or fire starter. And so if we had hot tea, or porridge of some kind, or, rice and vegetables, all of that was done on tiny open fire inside a kitchen enclosure that had, ventilation. So we were camping. Living in India was a total immersion in camping. Then if you go into the city, then you're in that environment with unimaginable amounts of cows and people and cars and crazy traffic and incredible heat and, but you could go out to a restaurant. You could get a beer and eat, their idea of, let's say, Chinese food. In southern India, well, you can't get meat because they're much more conservative in the south of India, even in the cities. It's really hard to find, nor would you want to make an effort to find meat. So you eat, masala dosa. And if you chomp on a red pepper, well, I hope you live. But the amount of burning that's going on, not just of, the sequestered fossil fuels or, ancient plankton, it's, it's whatever you can find. the 7-point-something, you know, billion of us burning our fair share of burning to create, you know, the simplicity of a hot meal for ourselves or our kids. Oh, well, top of the food chain, going down fast. The Arctic ice is turning to shit.
Did that big ice shelf break off yet? That was the Antarctic, though, right?
No, that was in the south. That big glacial chunk split off. Yeah.
Is that in the Antarctic or the Arctic? I can't remember now.
Antarctic. Yeah, that one.
It
came
off.
Yeah.
Like this size. A small country or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. It's going to be 70 tomorrow.
barbecue.
It's like, maybe I'll go to the beach.
Yeah, really. Let's go to the beach.
February.
So, you know, let's just say it's thrilling. In a sense, it's thrilling, if not depressing, to, you know, be alive at a time where it's quite possible that the whole pressure of humanity confronts the dire consequences of rapid onset climate change and shift in habitat and the ability to rely on the food chain. And here we are. It's begun. I mean, it's well underway. It's not like we're 10 years hence or 20 years hence. This is live. It's like Gil Scott Heron said, the revolution will be live. It will not be televised. It was a great song. It was one of those classic, I think, late 60s or early 70s tunes. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution is live. I was like, nice. So it's just interesting to place, the context of liberation or self-realization adventure in the midst of, let's call it a contemporary social or geopolitical milieu. It was all too easy for Ramana Maharshi, you know, simply because he was fucking God, you know, Brahman, to sit in a cave, you know, while creatures gnawed on his flesh, and he had no discomfort, no disdain, no refusal. Such was the nature of his yogic immersion that he didn't mind that his body was literally rotting or dying. I mean, that to some, that sounds like a panacea. To others, it just sounds like, you know, some freaky kind of bullshit. But Ramana lived, and taught, through his, you know, death through the mid-50s. Right? 40s and 50s. And I don't know, at that time in the sacred land of India, you know, around Arunachala, the Shiva mountain, from which the Ganges flows, even though, of course, the Ganges starts in the Himalayas, whether there was any consensus then of the, what would you call it, the curious and dire condition of humanity. I mean, when Ramana Maharshi was teaching, we had, madmen on Madison Avenue. When you look at the contemporary experience of the species at large, what we're seeing is just, you know, really, of course, unprecedented, because everything is unprecedented when it comes to humans. You know, whatever's happening now didn't happen a second ago. And now this is brand new, and this is brand new, and this is brand new. So, of course, everything is naturally unprecedented, which is kind of thrilling. But I think it's, you know, I think it's kind of naive to pursue the kind of realization that people were, you know, pursuing with Ramana Maharshi, or pursuing or enjoying under the guidance of Sri Ramakrishna or Sailor Bob or Nirsagadatta Maharaj or Wayne Lickerman or Stuart Schwartz or Peter Brown, climate denier Peter Brown, chemtrail denier Peter Brown. If you're a chemtrail denier and you're teaching liberation, as far as I'm concerned, you should just go fuck off. Because if you're going to deny the, you know, the aching and marvelous presence of the current, you know, socio-political, geopolitical, climatological influence of the present milieu in which we live, then, you know, you're just an isolationist enlightened goober. You know, well, you should be able to, you know, you obviously have heard this shit before. You know, these are my kind of pet peeve biases. But, you know, let's get jiggy with this shit. Why put liberation into some kind of a box that denies, you know, blatantly or passive-aggressively the climatological milieu in which the entire species is living? I mean, I can see, you know, the justification because we're not really born, we don't really die, and this isn't really happening, and nothing ever really happened, and the entire apparition of human life and Earth and Gaia and cosmos is, you know, a sleight of hand. So from that point of view, Ramana Maharshi sitting in a cave being gnawed on by creatures that didn't notice a fucking thing is, you know, that's the panacea of liberation. I get that. I mean, we can appreciate that. Nirsagadatta, you know, waving his hands, yelling at everyone in a loving way, talking about the absolute, I am that, or I am fat, or I am bald and fat. I am fat and bald, and that. Fat.
In a diaper.
Yeah. So, you know, but everyone that approaches this whole liberation thing, I mean, look at us. We're naive. We're fucked up. We're selfish. Selfish and repetitive, and we defend ourselves to the nth degree so that we can remain fat, bald, repetitive, and selfish. Okay, I get that. No problem. But it just seems like, you know, everyone's pulling everyone's chain. And that's like, I don't know, what would it feel like if we stopped pulling each other's chain? why couldn't there be a, you know, a quality of embrace or a quality of sanctuary that appreciates the stress of, you know, extinction pressure in the midst of, you know, the thrill of liberation? If the fucking plane flies overhead and leaves a cloudy streak across the sky, don't call it a contrail. Asshole. And I'm just, you know.
And the newspapers, day after day, are just talking about how hot it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the hottest fucking year record breaking.
Yeah, really? Really? Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's not happening.
It's the middle of February. It's the middle of February where I kind of remember sub-zero temperatures.
I wish someone was like talking about the weather, just doing their chit-chat, you know, today in the coffee shop, and they couldn't get out. It's just the normal chit-chat. Like, well, I just like it to be 70. I'm like, just trying to engage a little more, like, don't you think it's weird, though, that it's February? And they were just like, no. As long as it's nice, I don't care.
This is why India keeps burning everything they can get their hands on, and this is why Rex Tillerson is the Secretary of State, you know, cutting oil deals with Vladimir. Drill and burn. And repeat.
Yeah. Well.
Drill, burn, repeat. Drill, burn, repeat. They forgot drill, burn, and die, you asshole. Drill, burn, and die. You're not going to get a chance to repeat. But we're not there yet. We're still living under, living under the white fascistic moniker of Make America Great Again. Ha 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 ha. It's all you can find anymore is fake news. I don't think there's any reality left. That's why people are freaking out. There's no reality left to find.
No.
It's all fake.
It's
all
kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. It's always been fake. It's never been real. You've always been duped.
It's just very obvious by
everything. You've been lied to by government, lied to by corporations, lied to by the media, lied to by your parents, lied to by your teachers, lied to by your priests. All you've ever found is a sack of lies. Everything is fake news. It's like, oh boy.
Oh boy.
I mean, you know, if you're 17, you get a hickey from your girlfriend. It's a good day. And it is. Oh, boy. Too much fun. So, Suzanne, are we still on track, or do we kind of...
I'm just sort of doodling. Listen to my doodles.
Show us what you got.
They're weird.
Knowing you, that makes sense. Closer, 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 closer.
I don't know.
Like a psychology
session.
Come on, let's do a Rorschach test on you.
Well, sometimes I draw the people I see in the boxes, but they never come out the way.
Yeah.
You know, they don't come out as good as my week.
Well, you're drawing your auric impression of us.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah. Well, listen, I know these conversations are really hard to get through, so lying on balls, doodling, whatever it takes. Works for me.
I don't know, that sounds a little, I don't know.
What? did I offend anyone?
Who's offended?
All right, good, there you go. That's... Back in the non-dual groove.
Who's offended? Who am I?
Exactly.
Who am I to be offended?
That's right. You're no fall guy for the FSA.
The FSA?
The false sense of authorship.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know better than that. That lying, thieving FSA.
That's right.
Narrative consciousness collapses with let's call it the Aikido of a certain quality of attentivity. Narrative consciousness persists when we deal with it or ourselves superficially. So in that context or regard, the yoga of liberation is to, you know, discover the ways and the means that are natural to you, not someone else's idea, but that are natural to you, to sense and feel the nature of your own present experience. And by doing that in the way that you do best, because there's no rules and there's no one way, but in however that occurs to you, the sensing and feeling of present experience, then narrative consciousness implodes. And that implosion, occurring however many times, however deeply it may occur, that is the that's the bridge. That's the bridge and the demonstration of liberation. The implosion of narrative consciousness. And that's what we got. We can, you know, we can supplicate so-called liberation or enviable meditation experiences through what we think are skillful means. But those become so easily objectified by the habit of narrative consciousness. When the habit of narrative consciousness relaxes and relaxes again and relaxes again and relaxes again and easefully and on a customized basis, because it's your experience alone, relinquishes itself from reinvention, then you have this, you have this, you have this, you have this liberation. And it's silly then to even refer to it as liberation, because that implies that there's someone liberated from something, and there's not. Because the collapse of narrative consciousness is no longer defined by the presence of subjectivity or objectivity. So there is no liberation. The myth of the creature evaporates with the cessation of narrative consciousness. And then liberation can just fuck off. That's what this is, and that's how it rolls. So there is no, there's no, call it discernible understanding. Because that would be a waste of time. Not that there's something that's other than a waste of time. There's no understanding, because if one imagines him or herself to be a creature under the influence of, you know, the angst and pursuit of release, then, you know, you're a product or a function of narrative consciousness. And so understanding becomes objectified. And of course, understandably so. I mean, all of those things make sense based on the presumptions that we bring to the table. But if narrative consciousness, as narrative consciousness, releases its grip and grasping nature on present experience, then the creature, time, space, durability, individuation, being unenlightened, all that shit just disappears. And that doesn't necessarily leave you enlightened, because enlightenment can just fuck off. There is no goddamn enlightenment. Enlightenment. Enlightenment is just an idea for people that can't stand themselves anymore and they want to be more like Ramana Maharshi.
Oh, I did have a dream that you guys were hosting Ram Dass, but I was going out of town, so I wasn't going to be able to see him.
Oh, really? Is he coming?
No, just in the dream. He was coming to our little sangha.
Ram Dass visits the night sky sangha?
Yeah.
I bet you, you know, I know people that know people that know people. It wouldn't probably wouldn't be that difficult to get Ram Dass on a Skype call.
On a Skype call, yeah. Well, I think he's coming live, but yeah.
We'll get Ram Dass on a Skype call or a Zoom call, and he can tell us all about his latest book. What a fucking poser.
That'll be fun. You can laugh at him on video.
I mean, to his credit, you know, Ram Dass was in the right place at the right time to participate in, you know, what was a cultural revolution, a drug revolution, right, an enlightenment revolution. And, you know, to bring the otherwise quiet existence of Neem Karoli Baba to the suffering seeker fucker masses. So a lot of people have a tremendous amount of affection for Ram Dass, and clearly it was, you know, well-deserved or well-earned. But, you know, his days and his contribution to the Dharmic field are long over. He's a fucking has-been.
He just helps people now.
That's all he does is fucking help people.
Yeah.
And the way he helps them is that they go to Hawaii, and they go to the place where he lives, which was bankrolled by the now deceased
Wayne Dyer,
and then they do, you know, geriatric pool therapy.
Yeah.
So you go to Hawaii and you do geriatric pool therapy with Ram Dass, and he tells you some shit about his, you know, exploits, and then, you know.
At Wayne Dyer's old place?
Well, no, Wayne Dyer bankrolled Ram Dass in his own place.
Oh, before he died.
Yeah, and I would imagine that I hope that Wayne Dyer's foundation left a sufficient amount of resources for Ram Dass to carry on. I don't really know. I mean, Ram Dass hasn't called me for money. I'm glad he hasn't.
I hear my mother leaving a message on my phone.
Oh, sounds like a moment of stress.
Yeah, the tone of her voice kind of goes right to something. I don't know what it is.
I know how that feels, sister. I know how that feels. Yeah. Well, when I heard my phone ringing this morning and it said B and Ted, you know, I was like, the first thing I do is I run over to Beth and say, either you answer the call if you want to, or it's going to go to voicemail. You know, so Beth will, that
real
because she's so, because yeah, a real mature. Yeah, I know. I know. I don't answer the phone. I'm like, I go into a total panic.
Beth, I need help.
And I run to Beth and say, "Her, you can answer the phone if you want to, or it'll just go to voicemail." And she was, you know, finishing her shower or whatever, and she had to blow dry her hair, and there was no way she was going to answer the phone, nor should she have. So it went to voicemail. Then, later on in the day, I recorded my mom's voicemail on my laptop by holding it up to the microphone, turned it into an MP3 file, and then I sent it to my sister and said, here, you need to hear this. Real mature.
Real mature.
I'm enlightened. I've transcended the banality of consciousness. Oh, someone places a phone call and I run into a panic.
It's more.
We need each other.
You and your mother?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we'd all be better off if we could do sky burial.
What's sky burial?
They chop your body up and then put it out for the ravens.
Nice.
Or the vultures.
Wait, composted now with mushrooms and stuff. It's nice.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, contribute to the greater good. Like if they could use my remains as a mycelium.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah, for magic mushrooms, that would be a good thing to do.
Well, I don't think they're magic yet. We haven't gotten that far. But oh, okay. Yeah, that would be fun. And then you could, I mean, that's a great marketing business thing. You know, that's great, yeah.
I like
you
it.
Can actually ingest your loved one after they turn into a magic mushroom.
Oh, that'd be a freaky trip, wouldn't it?
Oh, I'm sure people would have a lot of experiences to share that would
wow. I ate magic mushrooms that grew out of the remains of my ex-wife.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then you start probably...
No, I turned into her. You don't understand.
Experiencing what she experienced. So.
Yeah, huh? That's right. You could start experiencing what your ex-partner experienced vicariously through the mushroom bridge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whoa.
That's a good idea.
Irritated they were at your every move.
Yeah, you're probably best off without that knowledge, huh?
No, they'll just torture you for like 8 hours straight.
Oh, they were lusting after.
Oh my god.
Yeah, really? That's right. la 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 la. You don't want to know who they were lusting
everyone
after.
Everyone will kill themselves that does it. You'll be like, never mind, I'm sorry. That was a mistake.
This is turning out to be a really good science fiction episode.
We'll just jump out the window.
Yeah. Yeah, what we're feeling and sensing and being a product of is a, just an awesome, you know, mitochondrial burst. And that mitochondrial burst is part chemistry and part, star farts and part consciousness and remarkable beyond any description. And here this is, this just ongoing streaming nature of sentience as mitochondrial burst, photosynthesis, right? The transmutation of, call it, you know, solar energy into plant sugars that feed the mitochondria in the human cell, which is not human because we are symbionts, down to the cellular level, if not the microbiological level. And here is this fascinating, highly sensual, remarkable animation. Wow. And we mistake this animation as self. And as self, you know, we suffer from the imagination of having too much and too little time at the same time. And that suggests an inner existential schizophrenia that we don't know what to do about. And so we will drill and burn anything we can get our hands on for a bowl of oatmeal. And at 7-point-something billion strong, sustainability of habitat communities for grain growing is failing, and that's why we will all die. We'd die anyway, so who's to know whether it's sooner or later? That's my sermon.
Very uplifting speech. Thank you.
Yeah, I want to join your church. I'm in. How do I get more of that Jesus? Give me more of that Jesus. I mean, you know, the magic of our lives is not compromised by the you know, let's call it the inevitability of so-called death, the magic of our lives is enhanced by, made wondrous by the inevitability of so-called physical death.
You know, we need a church that tells us the bad news.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The church of the subroutine. Bob Bobson. The church of the subgenius, right? Bob Bobson.
Don't say subroutine. I've written too many.
Yeah, I know. See, you, yeah, you're a lifelong celebrator of the subroutine. Yep. Database management subroutine aficionado. No matter what, you know, human tribulations or human triumphancy we can find, well, there's this mitochondrial, not to blame it on that, animated profundity. Experiencing. The miracle of experiencing, which can be penetrated so as not to be trivialized by birth or death or physicality. And that's liberation. Liberation is the untrivializing of the miracle of experiencing, decoupling it from life, death, birth, space, time, and implication. Then we are we are off the grid when it comes to any and all human systems to provide an explanation or a context for the miracle of ourselves. And how many of us, or how few of us, were there in us, are inspired, you know, to spelunk, right? We're basically spelunking our own consciousness, and our light source has gone out. Our helmet has gone dark, but we're still spelunking the miracle of our own consciousness. And that can, you know, gleefully, if not terrifyingly, push us beyond the limits of birth, death, corporeal loyalty, and even the content of consciousness. That's the sweet spot. Here this is. Ain't no authorities. Ain't no gods. Ain't no demons. Ain't no Genesis. Just spelunking in the dark. That's liberation. Which is nothing at all, because it's kind of silly to call it anything. And this has no utility. Whatever your life has been, is now, or will be, is gonna just, you know, it's just gonna suck the same as it ever has. Why shouldn't it? Wasn't that a load off? Just let the fucking life suck. Just the way it's gonna suck. Who gives a fuck? Because you're not the life. If we're still taking this so personally that my life has to somehow improve by virtue of the ardent nature of my spiritual pursuits, well, you're just a dumb fuckass. You should just go see Stuart Schwartz or something. Or anybody. Just go see someone that promises that your life will be better. Like Paul Hederman. You'll travel lighter. You know, you'll stop selfing. Who gives a fuck about that crap? That's just someone else's notion of, you know, small-minded enlightenment cosmology. Fuck you. Fuck off. It's okay that your life, if there were one, continues to suck in exactly the way it wants to suck because it's its business and not yours. So let it suck. Or keep trying to fiddle with it and make it suck less, which can suck.
Yeah, who cares?
Who cares?
It's all like a wash. You're like, I don't know what fucking would be anymore. But.
Doesn't matter. Just keep fucking with your life and fiddling with it to make it suck less. And that will suck, but so what? Because what this is nothing, and what you are is more of nothing or less of nothing.
All it does is fuck with itself ongoing and forever. That's the intimidating part. You're like, ooh. I'm just going to be fucking with myself forever on
that's pretty much it, you know? It's like, have mitochondria, will suck. But if you can get a little gratification from a relationship, from a job, you know, from ignoring and avoiding a parent, by handing your cell phone off to your wife because you don't know how to deal with life, do that.
Your bill collectors.
Yeah, avoiding bill collectors, you know, finding gratification with recreational drug use, you know, a relationship, whatever you got. Whatever you got, use it. Use it to suck less. But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter if it sucks or it doesn't suck or how you feel about whether it sucks or not, because you're a liar and a jerk anyway. No one's listening to your complaints. You think everyone's listening. We think everyone's listening to our complaints about whether life is good or bad or sucks or doesn't suck, and no one cares. No one's listening. You think you care, but you don't even really care. You're just too afraid to admit it. Well, if I stop caring about how much my life sucks, well, then no one cares. Yeah, that's exactly right. Nobody cares how much your life sucks. Least of all you. That's a good day. I don't know. Is this the kind of shit you're allowed to talk about if you're having a so-called, you know, spiritual discussion? Fuck if I know.
Yeah, I started listening to something from that German woman. What's her name?
Jasmine. Uh-huh. The German woman?
The one with my name. Suzanne Marie, I think her name is.
Uh-huh. How's it going with her?
Well, it sounded a little preachy, so I just turned it off.
Send her an email. Hey, Suzanne, fuck off.
Okay.
Or don't. I'll send it.
Okay.
Well, that's what happens. This gets preachy. The moment you land on a hint of cosmology, yeah, right? Then you're preaching. And people should do or not do, or if only this, if only that, or if they would, you know, pray to the same ascended masters I pray to, if they would do whatever Robert Adams did, you know, then if you're lucky, your life will suck less. No, it won't. And nor does it need to. I mean, that's, I would say, kind of a utilitarian, you know, utilitarian insight. Why put so much energy in hoping, imagining, and fiddling about that your life should suck less? I mean, this is a sorrowful, lonely business. No one gives a shit about what you think or feel. And if they pretend to, it's only because they give a shit about what they think or feel.
Or they want something from you.
Yeah, they want something from you, which could be your continued you know, your continued loyalty to them, because you would leave them in a heartbeat if you realized that they didn't care as nearly as much about you as you want them to. I mean, but we do the best we can, you know. You know, you get someone
I can't understand why nobody wants to call them, be on our call with us.
Oh, yeah. Could you imagine this? I mean, we should be overloaded with meetup members.
I like to imagine that I can talk to people like this, like, all day long. I'm like, yeah, maybe I could just start talking to people like this.
And yeah.
That's gonna happen, dude.
I know.
Like, I'll start trying, and then, like, I'm just, the look on their, whatever it is like,
yeah.
To know.
Well, everyone is so deep into the hallucination of themselves, you know, living through the lens of absolute denial and superficiality. We don't even know how to be, you know, even begin to approach intimacy or sanctuary. We're just pulling each other's chain. And living through the appearance of, you know, call it political or social, you know, correctness. Fuck. God. I don't know. I don't think a cuddle party is going to help at this point. This is too sad for words.
Sing Kumbaya, it'll be fine.
Welcome to the Sangha, by the way, you suck.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I don't know if anyone hasn't told you this by now. We want to let you know that you suck. Your meditation sucks, your practices suck, your gurus suck. All your prior life experience sucks. Your future life experience sucks. No one gives a shit about you or anything that's going to happen. Welcome to the Night Sky Sangha.
Loser.
Really? I would sign up for that shit in a heartbeat. Thank God someone's willing to tell just a little bit of the truth. And don't make me stop there. And we believe in chemtrails. And near-term human extinction. Woo! Really? And blue ducks. Blue plastic squeaker ducks. Oh, God. Jesus Christ, I have to go to all these fucking non-duality meetings and hear some goomba at the front of the room who looks like they're stoned on one thing or another telling me how they got there and what I should do to get there. I got double barrels for you. Take that, Stuart.
Well, you know, and nobody has anything to say anyway, so it doesn't matter.
What does that even mean?
Heck if I know.
See? You're not alone. Yeah. Just because we can make, you know, complex chirping noises doesn't mean we're actually saying anything. God, where's Eckhart Tolle when you need him? He can tell us some shit about silence or something. Or the power of something or other, like now, whatever that is.
But you have to pay for it.
Oh, well then, fuck that.
This is free, so.
Phew, no wonder this is so crappy. It's free. Yeah, you just suck them in because it's free. So this is like walking down to the Bowery and, you know, preaching to a bunch of drunks standing around a 50-gallon oil drum with a fire in it.
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Yeah, well, it must be court-ordered. Otherwise, you fuckers, I don't know what you're doing here if it's not court-ordered. Just email, just fax me your signature forms and I'll sign off that you came to the meeting. You can send it back to your parole officer and maybe they'll let you out of here at some point. Yeah, we're not allowed to say all this shit. We got to say like spiritual shit. Like Nam-myoho Renge Kyo or Namaste or something. You know. Satchitananda. All right, we covered it. Thank God somebody said Satchitananda during the meeting. Whew, boy, I was worrying there for a moment.
What does that mean again?
I don't know. I think it's like, you show me yours, I'll show you mine.
You go first.
Some kind of bullshit like truth, consciousness, bliss. I don't know. You know. Ew. Sounds terrible. Truth, consciousness, bliss. What does that have to do with me and my suffering? Come on, give me a practice. Give me something to do so I can get over my preoccupation with myself. Not going to happen. You're never going to get over your preoccupation with yourself.
Oh man.
Bummer. Down with the night. Down with the night sky, Sangha. Bummer.
Oh, fuck.
Fuck me. That's it. I'm not spiritual anymore. This group sucks. You suck. I suck. I'm done being spiritual. I'm going to go get a fresh copy of I Am That and put it in the bathroom. That'll be my road home.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, I know. I know all the things we hate to admit.
All the dirty little secrets.
Yeah, the dirty little secrets. I went on a Shinzen retreat once and I started noting. Ew. That sounds horrible. Yeah, I saw a Lama Suryadas speak. I thought I would hurl.
They should call him Lama Hurlyadas.
Lama Hurlyadas. That's probably what his Tibetan teachers called him, but he was too ashamed of it, so he had to rename himself. Sure. Oh, it's that Western guy, Lama Hurlyadas. You're not a tulku, you're a tutu.
I'm so glad we're making sense now.
Oh yeah, now it's starting to kick in. Yeah.
This is a segment of the show where we insult gurus.
Yeah. Well, at some point,
if you're easily offended, please tune off.
At some point, you got to tell the truth. You can't just be all politically correct and say Satchitananda. I mean, you got to get down and dirty, and you know, insult someone that's not here. I mean, isn't there some like major Buddhist rule about not gossiping?
Is there?
Not in this sangha.
Right. Is that what it would be?
This is liberation through gossip. Liberation through idle gossip. The unrepentant denigration of spiritual giants. Like Ram Dass. It's bad out there. It's bad. It's bad out there. People pretending that they are something or they've learn something, or they have a few Sanskrit words to kick around. Like Deepak. It's bad out there.
Hard out there for a pimp.
Yeah.
How about Daryl Anka?
Is that like Paul Anka's brother or something?
Daryl Hannah's sister?
Or Daryl, yeah, Daryl, or yeah. Right.
Same name.
Who is Daryl Anka?
He's the guy who channels that, what's his face? You know, the guy who channels the, I can't remember his name.
You can't remember the medium or the
Ryan.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Matt Kahn, Pleiadian poser.
Well, what about Naho?
Yeah. She's too cute to be to be right about anything. You have a terrible disadvantage when you're so sprightly attractive unassuming.
Oh, Bashar.
Oh yeah, Bashar. Yeah, sure. He's a riot.
That's Daryl Anka?
Yeah.
Okay. He's the Bashar channel. Cool. That's cool. You see, it's the consciousness. You see how the consciousness functions? It's very animating. It's very engaging. It's lithe. It's seductive. It's crazy in love with itself. Perfectly effulgent, radiant, strange in its characterization and sensuality. Wow. That's the thing. You see just how seductive the presence of your experience is. And that's why it's so difficult to get out from under the influence of that. Because this is immersive and, in a sense, kind of confusing. So we keep trying to make sense of something that's impossible to make sense of by participating in the delusion and the illusion of birth and death and space and time and self and experience and spirituality or secularity or anything that we can imagine cosmologically or otherwise, whether it's Pleiadian, Arcturian, Atlantean, or from Brooklyn. And it's just so engaging. We're like, wow, I got to make sense of this self, myself, this. I've got to make sense of this and myself through the memes, which I presume are capable of making sense. And the memes are not capable of making sense because all the memes are metaphoric, allegorical. They're untrue. Because the consciousness is wild, untainable, unattainable. And that's the, that's where you draw the line in the sand and start approaching the excruciating nature of liberation. You get out from under, which is of course too weird an idea, but you get out from under the profundity of consciousness itself. And as you wean yourself from narrative, then this just reveals itself to be what it actually is, which is an unspeakable, ongoingly mutative tapestry of blasphemy. It's just absolute blasphemy. And the myth of becoming just, evaporates in the midst of the mayhem. I'm fresh out. Any questions? What would be the point? As if this fucking shitstorm of, you know, unabashed weirdness could actually come up with a question or an answer to one. Give me a break.
What was Clarabelle's last words?
Oh, before she... Clarabelle, why do I always have to be Judy? No? Davy, am I going to go to heaven when I die?
Well, I don't know, Goliath. Clarabelle was from Howdy Doody.
Clarabelle was the clown from Howdy Doody.
Right, he didn't talk.
This is one of those I'm too young things, I think.
Oh yeah, sorry to leave you out.
He had two horns. One he honked when he meant the word yes, and the other one he honked when he meant the word no.
Okay, great.
Because he never talked. He was silent.
Uh-huh. He was like Harpo.
Yeah, it's like Harpo.
But the last Howdy Doody show,
yeah,
he finally said something.
Really?
He said, goodbye, kids.
Wow. Clarabelle finally said something on the last show. We could probably YouTube that shit, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
But it's so apropos to what we're talking about here.
I think so. You hit it right on the head. I talked for like an hour and a half, and you just hit it with one little tiny thing.
Should have just brought Howdy Doody in right away.
God, fuck you. I've been working this like calories after calorie, and you just nailed it. There you go. Goodbye, kids. It's a rubber ducky.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's not a good thing.
Was that it? Was that Clarabelle saying goodbye, kids?
I thought it was, but it... I don't think so.
Okay.
No, it almost sounded
fake news.
Sounded like Mel Blanc almost.
No, that's fake news.
Well, it was a still picture. It may have been, but it was a still picture. I thought I was going to get a live. I mean, like an animated.
If more and more people would just do what we did for the last hour and a half, I mean, it would just topple the government.
Quickly.
The military would just put all of its weapons down and say, "I'm going with those guys." We're like, I think we should stop building that Dakota Access Pipeline. I think the bank should all fail, and we're just going to just drop all of our weapons and just get out of the military, and now things are going to start looking up.
You'll see Rex Tillerson at DelVal.
We'll see Rex Tillerson coming to DelVal saying, so what are you guys talking about?
Petting cows with him.
Yeah, we talk about the truth. What do you talk about, numb nuts?
Petting cows.
Exactly. Yep, I love it. The Night Sky Saga is the the absolute revolution.
Rex Tillerson.
Hey Rex.
I'm envisioning Rex Tillerson in the Night Sky Saga. Yeah. At Del Val.
I know. Hey Rex, how's your meditation practice going?
Wait, who's Rex Tillerson?
He's the former CEO of Exxon, who happens to be the Secretary of State of the United States.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah. See how I am on things.
It might be true that he has taken Vladimir Putin's penis in his mouth.
What about his balls?
Oh yeah. those are hip deep.
The whole shebang.
Because that's like a different level, you know. I mean,
if we keep this up, we're gonna topple consensus reality. Thanks, Clarabelle.
Oh,
Oh, fuck. All right. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was fun. Yep. See you around. Okay.
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 Bye.
Bye.